Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. Once again, Craig Hill is with us. Craig has been with the Norris Group since 1995 and has helped establish really one of the best hard money lending companies in the state of California, and we're trusted with over $40 million now. Craig, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Bruce.
The concept of putting up money for loans, what percentage of the investors out there that do stocks and all that, what percentage do you think actually got it? In other words, they understand that completely, or it's just so new?
You know, I'm actually shocked sometimes by the number of people that I run into that don't really understand the investment.
I think I thought that, and I didn't even think to ask that question quite that way. But to me, it's like a foreign investment or something. It's not even part of the mainstream.
Yeah, I mean, and honestly, and I just sometimes you almost think like if you're talking to somebody for the first time, or it's almost like you're asking them to get a suitcase full of money and drive to Vegas. And in the meantime, they're investing in stocks or other things, which, I mean, everything has its, you know, its purpose, I guess. But a lot of times it's just really misunderstood. And I think the reason possibly, Bruce, is because the wide variety, when you're talking about a trust deed, a trust deed is attached to real property.
Right.
Okay, well, that real property covers a large gamut.
Right.
And a lot of different lien positions. So in other words, there's a wide variety. And I think for a lot of people, unfortunately, they assume a trust deed is the worst case scenario. Like, it's on the worst piece of property, maybe it's a piece of land, it's a third position. So,
along with about 15 other people that don't know what they're doing either.
Exactly. So I don't think they understand, just like anything else, a trust deed has, you know, it has different yields and different risk rates.
And I think, you know, we have an honest bias toward it in a way, because you and I have invested in them intentionally.
Yes.
And will continue to do so because of how we view, I guess, the safety versus return ratio and the control factor.
Yeah, it's, as you well know, the majority of my profit sharing, I mean, that's all I do with it and put it in trust deeds. And people might say, well, you need more diversity. Well, the nice thing about trust deeds is it doesn't mean you have one trust deed.
Right.
If you want to put, you know, more than, you know, $100,000 in trust deeds, let's say, you know, you can have numerous properties.
Mm-hmm.
So the nice thing about the investment itself, it gives you diversity.
As long as you buy into the concept. And I guess, you know, what's interesting when you said, when you're talking to people, it's not like you're asking them to, you know, go to Vegas with a bag of money. It's almost like they're physically leaning back or something and just almost don't want to try to comprehend the whole story. And, you know, when I try to explain it, and I don't do a near good a job as you do, but, you know, just talking to them, okay, have you ever borrowed money on a house? You know, it's got FHA or B of A attached to it.
Right.
That's basically your position.
Yeah, and you know, that's a great point. Even with as many conversations as I've had, I think I've learned one thing. You really can't talk anybody into a trust deed investment. And it might be true with anything. Maybe you can't, if somebody has a mindset that, like, trust deeds are not good or that this, just like if they had a stock thing, it's really hard to say sell somebody on it. So you almost, you just get a certain group of the population that understands it to some degree. They're able to say, yeah, I do see how I'm protected and how the yield is good versus, say, you know, getting, you know, 1% in a bank or things like that. So there is a large group that I think just backs away when you say the word trusteed.
And I think that might come from their advisors, now that I think about it.
Yeah.
And I really hadn't thought about this, but I can recall sitting in front of somebody that's in that capacity, and they looked at my portfolio and they said, well, this is completely lopsided. And yet it was lopsided to everything I wanted to own, real estate and trust deeds.
Yes.
And so they were, you know, I'm sure they would have thinking I should be part of some mutual fund or whatever, but there are different, I guess there's different directions for different types of people. I prefer to be able to have some control of the outcome. And I don't know how I do that when, you know, it's a stock or a bond or whatever. You know, it's just, if, for exactly. me, it's a better tool for me.
Yeah, it's just the thing I like about, and I have numerous investors, and one, I think, interesting thing about our investor base, I think as they grow into the investment, they really seem to put a large portion of their available assets into trustees. Because I think the longer you're in them and the more you understand it, I think the... It just becomes really just like, how much more can I add into it? Because they do really see the risk level versus the return. Now, another thing too, because I've had friends that do it, and they'll maybe be in other things also. But a lot of times, as you mentioned, it's almost driven by, you know, there's a commission to be made if you do something else.
Right.
But if you recommend to somebody to go into trustees, well, they don't lose anything by being in a trustee. I mean, they get the full return.
Yes.
So I think there is somewhat of a bias there too.
I think sometimes, you know, you can go through, like what you were saying in the beginning, there's product types that have trustees on them that haven't worked out.
Right.
And the odds were they probably were the riskiest possible trustee anyway. But that gets thrown into the mix when the comments are made about, oh, trustees are whatever, you know, are they risky?
Oh, absolutely.
So you don't take into consideration the specificity of, let's say, our borrower. So let's talk about who we're loaning to.
Yeah, I mean, just covering some of the bases, the first thing with regards to loan position, which is one of the most important things, I think still a lot of people, when they hear trustee, they're thinking, oh, geez, a second or a third. And what we mean by that is there's a first and then you lend them a second or something like that.
Right, and if somebody wasn't paying, then you would have to pony up the money for whoever was there first instead of you.
Exactly. With how we've always done it at the Norris Group, we're always a first trustee.
Yes.
Okay, so that's point number one. There's really never anybody ahead of you.
Mm-hmm.
The second point is, you know, what are you lending on? Well, you can lend on anything from a single family residence all the way up to raw land on a slope. And unfortunately, I know people that did the raw land on a slope in this last market.
Yeah.
But we only lend on single family residences. We do small units. So that's probably the safest and most accurate thing to really determine value.
Now, when you say, I just want to clarify, when you're talking about single family residences,
yes,
not being occupied by an owner, it's
no.
going to be fixed by an investor.
Exactly. So the properties that we lend on, they're either going to be fixed by an investor and resold, or they're going to be fixed by an investor and then rented, because once again, the market is just so perfect for that, which is hard to believe that California, some areas are cash flowing like they do for rental properties.
Yeah. The borrower that borrows a 9.9, are they also doing the other business as well?
Yeah, there's probably several groups. Some just do the buy and flips.
Okay, and that rate is 12%.
Yeah, 12.5% on that to the investor, or 12% to the investor.
Right,
and then the other clients are doing the 9%, which is, or 9% yield to the investor. And what those are, the difference there. On the buy and flip, they find a property, we put the money in, they fix it up, they resell it. So the yield is higher, yes, but what happens is their money comes out of the property. So it goes back to them, and then they're really not earning any interest or very little interest until we're able to put them back into another trustee.
Ryan, you had mentioned that just a minute ago. We got 5 payoffs in the last 2 days. That's money now that is going to find a home, and we have a list of loans that's going to probably take that money or most of it, and it could be 20, 30 days away from funding.
Exactly. So if that happens a couple times a year, which is very common, the yield on that is, you know, goes down to 9.5 or 10.
Yeah.
You know, it's nice because, you know, sometimes liquidity is good, so it does suit that purpose. But the nice part, and as you know, I almost exclusively do the long term myself, because the yield on that is only 9%. But the thing I like about it is, one, once I do a transaction, I feel I'm good for 5 to 8 years, 8 years being the term of the loan.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing, I mean, I'm earning 9% every day.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to be earning 9% a year and a half from now. even if it's a little slow, or because, you know, we've been doing this for so long, there definitely are ups and downs in the flip market.
Yeah, and I think there's a couple of things also that, first of all, it doesn't take any more of your time. I mean, thinking about a new trust deed, et cetera, takes time. When you're invested in something that's 8 years, you're really not thinking about that. Again, you're getting a check every month.
Exactly.
And so you don't worry about it. And also, the timing of these loans are really at the bottom of a market. And there'll be a day somewhere during that journey of an 8 year period where the prices are going to go up on that asset. And, you know, we're at a pretty safe LTV to start with, loan to value.
Right.
That's just going to get fairly absurd somewhere along the journey.
Oh, yeah. And probably using just a quick example, if I can, the most recent one that, say, I did myself. It was a little two-bedroom, one-bath house in Apple Valley. And I look at a couple different things determining whether it makes sense. Now, we appraised that for only $65,000, I believe.
Okay.
So the loan amount on that was around $40,000. So I have a first trust deed at $40,000 on that house.
Okay.
Well, here's some interesting things. During the peak of the market, that house was selling for just about $250,000. Okay, so that means now I have 40 on once was 250.
One sixth.
Yeah. So even if it only went up half, again, it'd be 125.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes you're able to see on the appraisals when some of the comps sold, like, you know, what year and what price. Well, all the way back in 1982, this particular house sold for $48,000. So I'm at 40, so I don't think anybody listening would not go to any house and buy it at 1982 prices.
No.
So, as you mentioned, we're in a unique position because where all houses, as we know, have come down, a lot of these areas in the Inland Empire have way overcorrected.
Yes, and way below replacement costs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Once again, usually we're dealing with about loans that are like $50 a square foot.
Yeah, and the rents are nearly twice what the payment is.
Yeah, so you're protected so many ways. So yeah, when you use the term trusteed, okay, if you throw it into the group, well, there's risk involved. When you really sit down with somebody, as I do when they want to invest, I invite them into the office, when you really show them all the details, it really is amazing how many ways you're covered. And the absolute other way, in as you know, in the long-term program, we haven't had one come back. But if a property did come back, I mean, you still have a lot of options.
Well, you end up owning a house free and clear because that's, in essence, what you do is chase the asset. And
exactly.
Now you will collect rents, which happens to be more than your trustee payment was.
Exactly. And you have the potential for all that upside.
Yeah. So it's... And that's never the intention of the loan, obviously.
Absolutely not, and not very common, we might add.
No, not very common at all. What are some of the concerns of somebody that's new to trustee investing? What are some of the questions that seem to be repetitive?
Well, I just think they're really nervous about the what-if scenarios. You know, I think they focus an awful lot on, well, what if he doesn't make payments?
Correct.
And I do understand that, so I always go over that an awful lot. But one thing that's interesting, when somebody comes in the office, and you've seen me do this probably a dozen times, I sit him in front of my computer on my desk, and I just click all the loans we have, and I go down the list. I go 500 back and show him just how few loans are even 30 days late.
Yeah.
So, you know, that is very profound, because I know if you went to Bank of America and they showed you the last 500 than any loan officer had written, there'd be a lot more 30-day lates than that.
It would seem, yes.
But it's interesting how they're so worried about the what-if scenario, yet in other investments, and we just mentioned one off the air, like, say, silver.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what if silver goes down 30% in a week? Or what if a stock, you know what I mean? They tend to really, when the what if scenario is you own a house free and clear, that sounds a lot better than like owning a stock that's gone down 50% and you need to know whether you should sell it now or it might go down another 50%.
Well, you know, I think that's the person that's investing in trustees has established some wealth.
Yes.
And at some point, you don't want to risk principal.
Right.
You want to get a safe return. And I just honestly, personally, just don't know of a better vehicle for most people that aren't going to get their hands into buying and selling the real estate, as far as just a very passive way to make a very good yield. I just don't know what can be what we do.
Yeah, and it's really rewarding when that person gets to you that is new to trust deeds, and unlike the ones that say have closed their minds to it, they're very open to it. And I mean, it's funny when you get the comment like, I can't believe this pays 9%, you know, which, you know, that's somebody that's open to it and they've done some research and they understand it. But that kind of yield is really not associated with the low risk that something like what the product we produce has.
I think what you said probably is very true, where you have somebody that has, let's say, a pretty sizable portfolio of other investments. We do seem to gradually get more and more of their money over time, because it seems like we're probably just the least hassle for the yield.
Oh, absolutely. The passive, I mean, you know, I've done the blueprint for you. The person that come, I mean, they want to be passive. They've already got their wealth. They don't want to risk it at this point. And the longer they're in it and they see how passive investment it is, the more they want to put in it. One of the other, from one investor, the only complaint he has is he just has too many checks. So we've even solved that by doing checks at the end of the month for him.
Just one check.
Yeah. So we, you know, if that's as passive as you want to be, I mean, it just really shows you can almost not think about it.
Does it ever concern somebody that's new? Why is this person borrowing at 12% or 9%?
Yeah, and that's a real common, that's another really common question, and that's where you kind of have to educate. And unlike the educating somebody on the investment of a trust deed, usually you can teach them why this person has to borrow, because they're out there in the public. They know how hard it is to borrow money, most likely. They realize that it does have a purpose. And when you show them the fact that, and the long-term program at 9% in particular, probably 90% or more of these properties are bought all cash.
Right.
And then refied. So it's kind of like, I tell people, really, do you need to know anything else except for this person had 90 grand to buy this house and fix it up, and now they're asking us for 72 or 80 so they can do it again.
Right.
So usually you're able to overcome that objection. That one usually isn't a sticking point, but it does come up a lot. But usually common sense wins out when you show them that we do deal with really quality borrowers, and we touched about that a little bit in the last half hour. The quality of the buyers that we're looking for.
What is the process that goes on prior to somebody in wanting to invest in a trust deed even gets a phone call? So, you know, you get a call from a borrower. What are the stages sort of checking out the situation before somebody who would get the phone call for a trust deed investment?
Well, before they actually get the phone call for the trust deed investment, we've really done every step to the point where we've qualified the borrower, we've qualified the property, and we've come up with the loan to value, which is generally 60% of what the property's worth. So for people that don't know what loan to value is, if a property's worth 100, we're gonna lend them 60,000 in first position.
Okay.
So usually at that point, then we're, say, marketing, which is really not the right word because we don't really have to market them. We just call almost who's next on the list, and they usually take them.
Right.
And then from that point on, there is kind of some background information. We're always going to get a title policy, so we're going to make sure that the title is okay on the property, and then we're also going to always get fire insurance.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, those things happen kind of after the fact,
but
it closes escrow, though.
But this is something that's already in escrow, and I mean it's a real deal. It's not a trial run.
Exactly.
And its appraisal is already in place usually before?
Yeah, the appraisal is always in place, because if somebody's new, once again, with the existing clients, I really don't do much more than a phone call.
Right.
But if somebody's new, I think it's always a good thing to be able to send them a copy of the appraisal so they can look at it and get to under, you know, a lot of people aren't familiar with looking at appraisals. So I find it's, you know, if I can email them a copy of the appraisal and they can just take a look at it, and then we can kind of have question and answers from that point forward.
Some trusted investors like to try to do it on their own.
Yeah, I mean, I think they do, and it's really, it's just such a hard thing to do if you don't have the experience. I mean, I just, the number I think we've done at the Norris Group is probably approaching 2,600 mm-hmm. loans, which probably comes from, you know, 20,000 conversations. And unfortunately, it's real easy to be deceived if you're only having one conversation with somebody and you're trying to make a decision, should I lend my money on this? And, you know, I won't tell people not to try to do it, but once again, it comes into that risk-reward scenario. If you're trying to do it on your own, maybe try to get a little higher yield or whatever the case.
But, you know, that's what's odd.
Usury.
You can't.
Yeah, you can't. Exactly.
You really can't. It's so funny that this is the one industry where working with a broker, as far as somebody with investment money,
right.
actually makes more money than they would on their own.
Exactly.
And if they tried to make more money on their own, they'd actually have a legal problem because of usury. So that's very unique. I think the key is that there's no way they would be able to get the clientele that we have. That's the difference, is the broad range of capable borrowers that call up and say, I want to borrow 12% money. That's not the phone call they're going to get if they try to do it on their own.
Oh, there's no way. And this goes back, our client base, I think, was never more evident. And I don't know the time frame you might, but it was probably 10 years ago when somebody, I believe it was, they were located in San Diego, but they had a base of clients and mm-hmm. they weren't going to do the business anymore. So they said, hey, why don't you kind of look at our clients and maybe you can help them out. And I don't know how many, if it was 100 or 200, but I think out of all of their clients, which they used to lend money to, I think only two
yep.
were clients that we would even deal with.
Yeah.
So we have really narrowed that process down to get to the good clients.
And it's an ongoing education process because
Absolutely.
Most of them have been through our education. They take our newsletter, et cetera. So they're up to speed on what's going on. And they're really not speculators. They're investors in the truest sense of the word.
Oh, 100%. I mean, most of them, this is what they do for a living. That's their investors, period. Exactly.
Some people also, when they're getting started, and they might be tempted to put in with other people in a pool.
Yes.
So what are some of the dangers if you're investing in a pool?
Well, if you're dealing with, say, a pool in general, where it's not tied to a specific asset, that
right.
would be, say, case number one. The problem with that is it isn't tied to a specific asset that you're aware of. So you're just investing in a pool, and then they can attach that pool to any asset they choose.
So it's a pool of unused money.
Right.
Trying to find a home to earn a yield.
Exactly.
And when that property comes up, or 10 properties come up, is that usually run by the pool as far as who is in the pool, or is it just the decision's already been made that whatever we find to loan on will be lent on?
Yeah. Unfortunately, that decision is out of the hands of the pool and in the hands of the person that started the pool.
So, I mean, and that could be both a good or a bad thing.
Yeah, I mean, it can be good because you're diversifying. Maybe one of the arguments I've heard is you're diversifying the risk or the potential for loss, but I think that's counteracted by the likelihood of loss.
depending on the, I guess, the urgency of a commission check needed, perhaps. I mean,
exactly.
Not everybody makes decisions the same way. And I think markets certainly dictate the risk level. I mean, we're at a market that's probably the lowest risk level I've probably ever seen in the private money business, because taking back a property, at least if it's got a roof on it, isn't going to probably damage you in a normal price range. Craig, we've run out of time. I want to direct people to our website, www.thenorrisgroup.com. You can check out the availability of, there's a trusted investment booklet. You're welcome to download that and check out our education for investors. Thanks for joining us.
Okay, thanks, Bruce.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.